Hello, beautiful listeners. I hope everybody had a great Halloween. Hope it was filled with lots of Reese's Cups, cleavage, and haunted houses. Just what Halloween is for, right? It's kind of the main show is coming up. Halloween's just the opening act. We got Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. The holiday season approaches. Maybe some of you hate it, some of you love it. If you enjoy spending time with your family, I hope you're doing that. I'm up in Northern California in my home area for the next few months, able to actually spend some quality time with the family before I leave again. So pretty excited about that. And in the season of Thanksgiving, or the time of Thanksgiving coming up, felt it was appropriate to take a second here and express my supreme gratitude and appreciation for all of you listening right now. At this very moment, you with the headphones in at the gym on the elliptical, working on those glutes, stuck in traffic in LA, in New York, maybe you're in Buenos Aires, I don't know where you are. Maybe you're walking your dog, or maybe you're picking your dog's shit up. Maybe you're doing the inside out baggy thing on that little weird grass spot in between the road and the sidewalk. It's on the sidewalk, but it's like the 2 foot little stretch of grass. Maybe you're picking up your dog shit right there, listening to this right now, bending over, listening to my voice. So that's cool. I appreciate you listening. And I really appreciate all the comments I've gotten lately, some texts, some emails. Even had a friend of mine that texted me after the last episode with Jesse, and she said, I loved it, but you use a lot of filler words, something to work on. So I re-listened to it, and I sound like a Valley girl. I think I said like about 352 times. So that is definitely something to work on, constructive criticism. I really appreciate it, and I hope, you know, let me know if something needs to be fixed on this podcast. Definitely let me know, and if something is going really well, then let me know as well. And you know, I hope that after each guest I have on, after you guys listen, I just want everyone to listen and it opens something up for them that they needed to be opened, or maybe it closes something that needed to be closed. Whatever it is, we're going for potential here, people. We're going for fucking potential. That's really all there is. That's what I believe in the most. Potential for all of us to go beyond our self-imposed limitations. If they're self-imposed, it's a beautiful thing because we put them there and now we can take them away. So that's what I hope after listening to this podcast, that it just leaves you a little bit better off than when you started listening to it. So if it's not doing that, then stop listening and let me know why you stop listening. And if it is, leave me some reviews, send me some messages so I can keep working towards crafting that type of experience for all of you. So with that in mind, I have Zach up for this podcast episode. Name has been changed to protect the information shared, and he was in the U.S. Army and now has PTSD symptoms, which is affecting millions of Americans who have courageously gone overseas, whether you agree with the politics or not, to protect this country, and now they are coming back and not being taken care of. So, talk about a waste of potential. So, I hope you get some insight and enjoy listening to this podcast. Leave me some reviews on iTunes. Leave me some more comments and messages, and I will see you guys on the next show. Ciao.
Welcome to Pull Up a Seat with your host, Alex Starr.
Here was Zach. Thanks for coming on, dude. The first thing I wanted to say is thank you.
No problem, man.
For coming on, dude. No, because barring all military service aside, in my personal opinion, what to come on and at least give your side of the story and what other people deal with and stuff is, I think, the most brave thing you can do.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on, dude. I'm stoked. From a civilian standpoint, this is what always boggles my mind, okay? Mm-hmm. Is that we're sitting here in a nice backyard, right? I'm visiting. But, like, you know, as you go around the country as a civilian, life goes on per usual. Per fucking usual, right?
Yes.
I'm strolling around. I'm deciding what I'm going to get from the market, my work. Life goes on. I have no idea. The only image I have of what's going on is what I see on the news. Maybe if I go on, like, Vice and try and find some documentary. But I don't know what the fuck is going on over there. I think most people don't. I just wanted to... How did you get into it? How old are you?
I wanted to join from a really young age. Because my dad's dad was in the Army. He joined, like, within a week after Pearl Harbor.
Oh, okay.
And went to Europe. Which is funny because he joined probably to fight the Japanese, and both of his parents had emigrated to the U.S. from Germany.
Oh, really? So
he joined the Army, and he joined early enough to where he went to went to North Africa, was part of that. He was involved in the landings in Italy, and then from there was part of the Normandy invasion, and then got out of the Army. So he joined 41. Like the last, you know, week of December 41, and then didn't get home until 1946. So, like, hearing, like, his stories when I was younger, and, like, hearing his stories from, like, my dad and uncle, like, my whole life, like, that's what I want to do. I want to join the Army. Nice. And then September 11th happened when I was a freshman in high school, and, like, it enraged me, obviously, but then there was kind of, like, this notion of, like, oh, thank God, now there's going to be a war. Like, awesome.
You were stoked that you were able to go be a part of it. Okay.
So I tried to join when I was 17. I was going to graduate high school early and go in. And it was during the surge, like right after the Second Battle of Fallujah in 2004, before I turned 18. And when they were building up for the surge, my parents were like, no. They called horse shit on that. And they're like, if you want to join the military, like, go to college first and be an officer. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. So I tried that for a few years after I graduated from high school.
Where'd you go?
I went to a community college.
Okay.
And then I just kind of called horse shit on college. I was like, nope, just want to be enlisted. So I joined.
You're 20 at this point?
I was 22 when I joined. Okay. I didn't go to school full time.
It's community college.
There was partying. There was
community college full
partying
time.
To be done and you know, stuff like that. I actually joined the Army on my 22nd birthday. The girl I was dating at the time, I was like, hey, like, I'm going to do this. Like, I've always wanted to do it. And she's like, oh, I support you. Like, I'll stay with you and all that. So I joined on my birthday. I get back from MEPS, the, like, intake place where they, you know, look at your asshole and balls and you give blood and have to pee in a cup and all this dumb shit.
Yeah.
And then, I get back. She's like, we need to talk. She's like, yeah, this isn't going to work. And just, like, bounced and started blowing some weird, like, old ass hipster dude that writes poetry and cries. It was like, whatever.
Does he have a man bun?
No, that wasn't cool at the time. He had like the 50s dad haircut. Okay. And like the shitty little beard.
Okay. That's always a bummer.
It's whatever. Like, it pissed me off at the time because I was younger, but like now it's, you know, just a funny story.
Sure.
Like, ha ha ha.
Totally.
But, so yeah, then I left for basic training and, I had assumed that, you know, we were going to get yelled at and shit like that, you know, do push-ups. It was a vicious thing. Like you show up to basic training.
And this is Army basic training.
Yes, Army. Okay. Army infantry in the Fort Benning, Georgia. You know, 16 weeks of just one station unit training or OSUT combat training. And we show up and like the first drill sergeants you see, you don't know this at the time, but they're not they're not real, like, drill sergeants. Like, they just work at 30th AG, the reception area.
Okay.
And they're not allowed to fuck you up. They're just supposed to be, like, intimidating and, like, scare you. But they can't really do anything.
Right.
So I was there for a week and got used to them. I was like, oh, if this is what basic training is going to be like, it's going to be easy as fuck. Then our real drill sergeants picked us up, and they were calm and everything. And then we showed up to the barracks. They, we got off the bus. There's, like, smoke bombs going off. They're, like, shooting blanks, yelling at us, all this shit. You had to grab your duffel bags and all this shit and, like, run, like, a mile and then run to, like, the barracks area, again, the push-up position. And, like, the first direct quote I heard from my drill sergeant, who's a fucking vicious psychopath, I found out later, was like, you know, when you're in the front lane rest, the push-up position, he's like, faggots go to their knees and bitches put their ass in the air. And they're like, if you have bitch in your heart, get the fuck out of here. Just like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, dudes are, like, throwing up because they're civilians and they never run, like, further than, like, the corner store to get more Nutella or whatever the fuck they're doing. And then, like, it's just confusing.
Totally.
Because in that environment, like, you're sitting there, like, you've been awake for, like, 3 days at this point, pretty much. Like, doing your intake into the army, you're exhausted, and you're sitting there getting yelled at by these dudes in, like, your squad bay. You're looking around at the other dudes, and they're the ugliest human beings you will ever see in life. Like, they're all in, like, their boxers, just, like, fat, gross dudes.
Nutella. Like, yeah. Nutella.
Yeah. Fat, gross dudes, just, like, ugly human beings from, like, the Midwest, where, like, I'm sure there's some degree of inbreeding, like, not, like, sister on brother, but, like, unbeknownst to them, like, distant cousins, just that keep marrying them. And shit, you're just like, what the fuck have I done?
There's that moment in all endeavors where you hit that, what am I doing here? Totally.
And then that's just, you know, 16 weeks of, like, getting treated like shit. Like, you learn how to shoot the way the army wants you to. You learn, like, military operations and urbanized terrain, how to do, like, mounted patrols and vehicles.
This is all within the 16 weeks. Yeah. So it's training plus breaking you down.
First aid, how to call in, like, a medevac, like, all your basic, like, soldiering tasks. Yeah. You have to learn a bunch of, like, learning cadences while you're running, like, just, because, like, the military in general, every branch is just kind of like a fucked up Mickey Mouse club. Like, there's a whole lot of singing involved.
What do you mean?
Like, you have to, like, in our case, like, the Army song, you have to learn the Army song.
Okay.
Like, you have to learn
Mickey Mouse Club.
Like, the soldier's creed, the infantry creed, you have to, like, when you're running, like, running or marching, you'll sing cadences, like, to keep step. And also, it's just way super boring to hear someone for an extended period of time saying left, right, left, left, right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you sing, yeah, so it's like a fucked up Mickey Mouse club. Like, it's like a musical, except it's not, like, endearing or anything. It's just, like, gross and offensive. But, so that's...
You have really good descriptions so
right?
far.
Yeah, really good analogies.
Yeah, you know? great, yeah.
You know, I'm also good at, like, hypotheticals. Like, a popular one in the Army, the two most popular ones, at least in the infantry, I don't know about the rest of the Army, is... The infantry walks a razor's edge between, like, dudes bored and just coming up with funny questions and dudes just being gay as fuck.
Okay.
So you'll come up with questions like, you know, how much would it cost for you to suck a dick?
Right.
Usually people start out like, oh, a million, or I would never do that. Dude, if they're out in the field for long enough and they're tired and hungry and they run out of dip or cigarettes or whatever they do, like, that number starts dropping. Okay. Like, and it goes down to, like, you know, like, six digits and then five. And sometimes if things are shitty enough, you end up in, like, the two digits. Like, or even if I could go home right now, I'd suck everyone's.
Could you go home? Okay, yeah.
A really good thought exercise, actually the best one I've ever heard in the Army in terms of that is it gayer for two dudes to suck one dick or one dude to suck two dicks?
Dude, the past, like, two podcasts, people have mentioned dicks, and Jesse mentioned on the last one. Of, like, yeah, I'm going to mention dick because there's dicks mentioning. And now you're continuing the tradition without even knowing that. So, well,
I can tell you this.
Congratulations.
About Jesse, that I believe he's of the same thought process as me, that it doesn't matter how many dicks you add to the equation. It doesn't make it any worse. But if you had to, like, look eye to eye with another dude and, like, swap spit while, like, moaning on, like, a hog, that's probably worse than just having two in your mouth at once.
Sure, but, sure.
I mean, it's...
So you're...
Occam's razor would dictate.
Yeah. So you're at the end of the 16-week training period,
mm-hmm.
and how you're 22 now. You're still 22. It's been 4 months. And how soon after that do you get deployed? Because this is 2000. What did you say? 2000. This is probably 2006 then?
This is 2010.
Oh, 2010.
10 going into 11.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, after basic, I had hometown recruiting. So I got to go home for 2 weeks and help my recruiter. All that really happened is I went home. I was supposed to help him, but everyone that came in didn't want to do infantry, and I was just harassing them because, you know, I was high on the smell of my own piss and just like infantry's the shit, woo, yeah, that sure. type of shit. So he just signed off on my paperwork. He's like, just don't come back. All right, okay. You're good.
Yeah.
So hung out with my friends, bullshitted around, and then reported to my unit. And then that was a whole new level of thing. You report to your unit, your actual brigade, battalion, then company pick you up. And then you start getting fucked up by the specialists and corporals all the time.
For how long?
Oh, just until you're a specialist.
But okay, so what were you training for? What was your specialty?
Infantry. When I first showed up, I was an infantryman. That was my MOS. But when I got to the unit, I became a saw gunner. That's usually how it goes.
Hold on a second. Is that a Coast Guard chopper? That was weird.
Yeah.
I think it was.
Is the new guys are usually placed as either machine gunners, either on the 240 Bravo or the SAW, the M249 squad automatic weapon, which is actually contrary to what the Army wants, where they want an experienced guy in the machine gun, but the newest guy usually gets fucked and has to carry the heaviest weapon.
Okay.
So I showed up, got put in my platoon, got assigned to be a SAW gunner. And then grenadier, then rifleman, then machine gunner, then back to saw gunner. And, I did that. I was with my unit in America and garrison for about a year and a half before we deployed. Because when I showed up to the unit, they had just gotten back from a deployment. So they're in their, reset cycle.
How long's the reset?
It varies. I think the Army wants a year and a half to 2 years.
Okay.
But sometimes during Iraq, I've heard of they got 6 months to a year.
And then back out.
Yeah.
And a tour is how long?
It used to be 12 months or longer. We had dudes who had been deployed for 15 to 18 months in Iraq. But they would get 2 weeks of R&R where they could come home for 2 weeks during their deployment. The Army decided to stop doing that and decided to do 9 month deployments. But there's no R&R, so you're just 9 months straight.
9 months,
which that's another debate on which one is more pleasant. If you're there for 12 months, get 2 weeks home, you still get paid more money.
And it's only 6 months mentally, mm-hmm. you know, if you take it right in between.
Yeah, so there's that. I mean, though it probably is really horrible, you know, getting shot at every day for 6 months or however long, coming home. You know,
yeah, that's true.
Getting your dick sucked and then knowing that I'm going to hop on this plane and go back to getting shot at.
Yeah, that's true.
I had a buddy, a sergeant actually. He was a friend off work, but, you know, my superior at work he was from San Diego and he went on leave during the deployment before I got there. And he was playing soccer at a park and these kids, gangbanger, teenagers came up, started hassling him and beat his fucking ass. So he comes from Afghanistan and gets beat up in his hometown and then has to go
back.
Where
was this at?
Logan Park in or whatever in San Diego, a really shitty part of San Diego. He got beat with a tricycle, too. That was part of it.
What the fuck?
Yeah, they took a kid's tricycle and beat him with it.
Dude, it doesn't get much more ironic than that.
And then when he got back, he got hit by an RPG shrapnel. And he got all fucked up. He had scars all over his upper torso. So yeah, shit like that happens.
Jesus, yeah. So what was the day like? What do you remember the date that you got deployed? What was that day like? Were you stoked? Were you?
Yeah, I had spent the night before hanging out with this girl that I'd been talking to, and showing her all the different stuff my penis could do, and then
it's always. Yeah, it's fun.
And then she drove me to base.
They're not very versatile, but yeah.
Okay. You know, different tricks.
Yeah, different tricks, sure. So she drove you there?
It drove me there. We queued up and all that. Took a bus to the airport and waited. Hopped on the plane, flew to Alaska.
Okay.
Got off the plane, took a break. Hopped back on the plane, flew to Kyrgyzstan. Got off the plane... got our like transient barracks for however long they had to be in Kyrgyzstan before they could fly us into Afghanistan to Bagram Airfield. Then from, yeah, Bagram, we had to go to Jalalabad Airfield to hop on helicopters to take us to our final destination in Kunar province in eastern Afghanistan in the Pesh River Valley. So yeah, it was just a really long fucking day.
Yeah.
And on the flight, the staff sergeant, like, hey man, you having trouble sleeping? I'm like, yeah, dude. He's like, oh, here's some sleeping pills. I'm like, oh, sick. Well, I took them and I was like, oh yeah, I'm getting sleepy. And the next thing I know is I wake up and I have like drool all over my crotch and like my iPod's on the ground. And I'm like, hey man, what the fuck were those? He's like, oh, those were Somas. I'm like, that's not a fucking sleeping pill, you oh, dick.
God, dude.
So there's that. Yeah, it was just a really long.
And when you show up, you're there for how long did they tell you you're going to be? What was your tour supposed to be?
It was supposed to be 9 months. It could go to 10, but it was nine.
Were you anxious?
Not really. Like I was stoked. Like, cause you're just like rushing, waiting, rushing, doing a bunch of shit. So you didn't have time to think. The only time it really hit me was at JAF, Jalalabad Airfield. They showed us like a video, like mandatory training video on IEDs. And it showed like just trucks getting blown the fuck up, dudes getting their like legs ripped off. Like, and that's when it finally hit me like, oh shit, this is like real. And I felt like I was going to puke.
Yeah.
But I didn't. Kept it down. Didn't want to look like a bitch.
Never want to be the pussy.
So yeah, like we finally showed up to where we were, did left seat, right seat patrols with the unit we were replacing where they show us where everything is. Not going to name any units, but this particular battalion, anytime they took contact in any like certain area, they would just not go there again. Like they would just like plan their patrols to avoid the problem areas.
Okay.
Which is.
So can you real quick, can you explain when you say you're with a particular battalion?
Mm-hmm.
What does that consist of?
I'll start from smallest to biggest. So at the smallest level, you have your fire team, which is your team leader. And if it's a line unit, you have, so you have team leader, rifleman, grenadier, and saw gunner underneath the team leader. There's two teams per squad. So you have two of those that are the same setup and then a squad leader. There's four squads in a platoon.
Okay.
Fourth squad is weapon squad. So you have, that's where the medium machine guns are, the 240s and the anti-armor guys. But since we're not fighting Russia or China, like they don't really have a job. They just carry ammo for the machine guns. Then you have three line platoons in a company with headquarters platoon is like the office bitches and they don't really do anything. So no one really likes them. And then you have, let's see.
Squad, platoon, company.
Team, squad, platoon, company. And then in a battalion, you have five companies. Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie are regular line companies, like I just described.
Okay.
Delta is a heavy weapons company, so they have, like, trucks with, like, 50 cals or Mark 19s, tow missiles, that type of shit. And then either Echo or Fox, in our case, Fox. They're like your mechanics and shit like that.
So is a battalion a all-inclusive, comprehensive, kind of like self-sufficient unit that
no.
If you go out with one battalion, then like it has everything needed or?
No, it doesn't have everything needed because your battalions are either, like in our case, we were an infantry battalion.
Okay.
Brigades are the next one up. So you, in like what I deployed under, the Army recently changed it. I'm not sure on how it's set now, but I was a light infantryman, so we had two infantry battalions. Our cavalry squadron, our artillery battery, and then your brigade support battalion that handles like food, like gain all that shit, like everything to support the
logistics.
Brigade. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the brigade is a self-sufficient unit. So every division had at least four brigades when I was deployed. So like for deployments, because before we invaded Iraq, the Army was still set up for like division level operations. Like we were going to fight Russia, but that's not really that efficient for waging a counterinsurgency. So they changed it to make each brigade like modular. So you could like, you have, you know, your four brigades and you could be like, okay, you know, first brigade from this division, you know, first brigade, first ID is going to deploy.
Okay.
And so you could just piecemeal together what you needed instead of having to like send a whole division, historically like 20,000 men.
Right.
But it's usually more than that now.
Okay. So you're in that battalion.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your initial objectives when you get there? You got your barracks set up, I'd imagine. There's a command post.
It wasn't barracks. Like, we were on a little combat outpost, so we had like these like rooms that I'm assuming the Russians had built when they were there. They were old as fuck, and we put up like plywood to make like semblance of rooms, but it wasn't very good. Like, you just hear like your neighbors like aggressively jerking off or fighting with their wives on Skype. Or in some people's cases, like, just gross sounds of them like fucking like a pocket pussy. Just like, oh God, I hate these people so much.
Jesus, dude. That's like your relaxation time to come back to. Yeah.
But we didn't get a lot of that because we were there during the fighting season, during Ramadan, in like arguably Kandahar and Kunar are the worst provinces in Afghanistan.
And where were you?
Kunar. Kandahar is the birthplace of the Taliban. So there's a lot of stuff down there. Kunar, it's like this weird, like, Appalachia of Afghanistan where they just don't want anyone there. There's like weird hillbillies, like just assholes. And it's on the Pakistan border, so you have a ton of like arms and stuff coming in.
Yeah.
So, like, we were there during Ramadan when they don't eat all day and then they get angry and they just want to fuck up Americans.
Right.
And the unit before us had been lazy, so they had time to just like grow, like just fester and grow. So we had the benefit of having to do, you know, 2 or 3 day a day patrols or just long term patrols, like going out for like a week, going to different ANA, Afghan National Army outposts, or Afghan National Police or their Border Patrol or whatever, whoever we were working with.
Yeah.
And just, you know, fucking shit up. We re-cleared that valley, that Marine Dakota Meyer got the Medal of Honor in. So yeah, it was a pretty shitty place to be. Like,
what were your objectives day to day?
Our overall objective was to build relations with friendly villages and route out like insurgent activity, whether that was the Taliban, HQZ network, Pakistan Taliban, or just whatever element. Cause you don't really know. Like, you just say the Taliban, but it could just be some like splinter group that has nothing to do with the Taliban.
Right.
It's just pretty much,
right.
Pretty much support the locals that support America and fuck up anyone that was trying to like fuck us up.
Okay.
So yeah, that was pretty much was to fuck shit up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that consisted of like clearing buildings, clearing neighborhoods.
Yeah, you would go, you go to friendly villages and have shuras, like meetings with their elders, and you know, give them stuff or like try and like see how you can help them
maintain good relations.
Yeah. Or you would just go, you do like route clearance patrol where the engineers, like the EOD guys, would be clearing like the roads, and you'd be their security element to protect them. Overwatch for like resupply convoys, like you'd go to key areas and just like overwatch it so they didn't get ambushed. Raids, like if there was like a high value target in HVT, like, you know, you'd get the village in the building and then just roll in there and ruin their fucking life.
Yeah, so did what, stepping away after how, total months you were there, how long?
Nine. I was 9 months. Nine.
So after 9 months stepping away, better or worse than when you came in?
Towards the end of our deployment, it really died down. Like the Taliban in our area was no longer combat effective. Like, we had fucked their life up. Like, they couldn't really fight. They could do like an IED here or there, but towards the end, they weren't even fighting anymore. And that was also around the time, it was actually towards the end of my deployment, where the Taliban approached the Afghan national government to try and have peace talks. So the Taliban had realized that they were losing towards the end of our deployment. So it felt pretty good coming home. And then this shit just happened in Kunduz or whatever, where, you know, the Taliban like fucking almost overran the town. Like, this shouldn't be happening. I don't understand what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan, like how this has happened.
While you're there or when you come back?
Like now, like, you know, 2 years removed, like it seems like we won Iraq. Like, there's no insurgency there when we left.
Yeah.
Like in Afghanistan, like by 2013, like the Taliban was a broken enemy. And now it's just like, we didn't finish the fucking job, it feels like. And it's,
what do you think about from your insider perspective and being there and seeing how the system works from the inside? what do you think about when you hear, like, people, you know, it's like, it's the military-industrial complex. Of course, your guys aren't done there because there's always going to be someone to fight. A, there's oil over there. Okay. B, there's, what do you say to that?
Well,
from what you saw,
Afghanistan doesn't have oil. They have, like, helium deposits, shit like that. But there's no infrastructure to really get it. Plus, America has huge helium deposits. So there's, like, are we going to wage a war for helium?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Or just in, like, the fact of, like, the military-industrial complex, you hear people say, well, it has to stay busy. It has to do something.
Well, I mean, if you look at, like, during the 90s, it stayed busy, too. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it has been for a while. Sure, yeah.
So you don't even need a war to keep it busy, and this isn't the type of war that would even be good for them. Like, what would be good if there was, like, a true, like, military-industrial complex, like, pulling the strings and all that shiz? Like, a massive, like world war would be very good, because then you could produce just huge amounts of equipment, just, you know, like the old pictures of World War II, where it's just big ass warehouses and just rows of tanks and fucking bombers and all that shit, and the whole, like, civilian populations, like, organized to, like, build shit. Like, so you have, like, all the males in service getting issued this equipment, everyone back home who either can't fight or, like, women and stuff is, like, are building tanks, airplanes, and ships. That would be good for business. What isn't good is limited orders of, like, oh, we need, you know, 10,000, you know, MRAP trucks. Like, that's, yeah, it's money, but it's not, like, that type of massive amount of money that people think. Because, like...
Okay, that's interesting, because I think a lot of people, myself included, get the idea from the media or from what I read that, which makes sense. I mean, I think there is a certain extent of, like, pork barrel spending, gerrymandering, where it, like, creates this... jobs based on, like, hey, we need an F-10 fighter for the military, so let's create it in this.
Oh, that shit does happen. Like, the whole
all the gear that's created. But it's interesting that you think that it's not big enough to really be a
it's not like a massive thing. Like, there is definitely, like, you know, back scratching where, like, some general gets out, endorses some product, and because his name's attached, the army will adopt it. Like, we got issued like crotch protectors, they're like ballistic diapers,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you didn't get your junk blown off.
Yeah.
But even then, if something went off, it would rip your legs off and you'd probably bleed to death. The only difference being is you still have your junk, but you look like an asshole wearing a camouflage Kevlar diaper.
Okay.
and shit like that. Or like the current army uniform that they're getting rid of, like the ACU, that gray bullshit. There is no way that did not get adopted without someone like attaching their name to it.
Politics.
Like, yeah. Okay. So, like, individuals definitely get rich off of bullshit that the military does. Like,
right, okay.
Because it's a huge thing. And at the top level, like, they're really out of tune with what, like... Because the army, like, it sounds shitty, but the entire army revolves around the infantry. Because that's the army's job, land combat.
Right.
So, every job is there to support the infantry. All the logistics, armor's there to support the infantry... Depending on if it's like a tank-on-tank battle, then the infantry supports the tanks. But by and large, like, artillery supports the infantry. And the top leadership of the army is very rarely infantrymen. So they approve all this shit that they think's going to be, like, fucking good, but they have no frame of reference for how it's going to work because they don't do that.
Right.
Yeah. They're sitting in office at the Pentagon, and it's like, oh, that looks really tactical and cool. The guys need that. But these are the same people who... you know, haven't slept outside in terms of their military service in, you know, over 20 years. That's, and then they see, like, point. Filthy, like, infantrymen on the field, like, oh my God, why is your uniform dirty? Like, you smell like a bum's nutsack. And right. It's like, whoa, I'm doing my fucking job, dude.
Right, yeah. That, it's always the people at the top of the pyramid always make the decisions when they're not out there. They're not...
Yeah,
they're not,
I mean...
They're not doing the dirty work, and they're making the hardest choices that decide the lives of the people that are actually doing it.
Well, it's like the horse shit they just tried to pull. Like the army was cool with tattoos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as it wasn't your neck, face, or hands.
Yeah, I heard it can't be past your wrist. A buddy of mine tried to do it, and he had a tattoo that went, like, slightly onto his hand.
They can wave shit like that, but
okay.
Just for the sake of this, like, no hands, neck, or face.
Okay.
Or hands. Did I say that?
Yeah.
and then they tried to be like, nope. No visible tattoos in shorts or t-shirt. And then the new sergeant major of the army, thank God, got people's opinion, like enlisted personnel. And they're like, yeah, like, we want tattoos. And he was like, I had no idea this was such a big thing. It's like, well, it's your, dude, I respect you. Like, you're sergeant major of the army. Like, I think
you're also 60 something years old.
But, like, how could you be that out of touch? Like, go to any military base and look right outside the gate. There's four things you'll always see outside a military base: payday advance, pawn shop, strip club, liquor store, and a motherfucking tattoo shop. Five things, my bad. And then surrounding those, you'll see ads for, you know, $200 divorce lawyer, because idiots in the military like to get a lap dance from some stripper with five kids from five different dads and then get married, be like, we're in love. And it doesn't work out. Let's be fair.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. So I would like to hear about bad stuff first and then hear the good stuff, and opposed to, like, what, in your opinion, over there is not working. What were you doing that served no purpose? What went wrong? I would like myself and the listeners to know the truth.
Okay. The upper leadership trying to do this whole, like, you know, like winning the hearts and minds. There's a lot of villages in Afghanistan that don't like the Taliban, but they also don't like us. They just don't want people there.
Understandable. Okay.
But we kept, like, pushing them and, like, you know, trying to win them over. And it's like, dude, just leave them alone. Whatever. There's parts of Afghani culture. It's a beautiful place and there's nice people, but there's parts of it, like the practice of bachabaze, which translates to child play, where grown men like to fuck younger boys. And then you hear this. So essentially you're getting forced to work with child rapists.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll hear the excuse like, oh, well, it's their culture. You can't change culture. Well, two examples real quick. Germany had a long history of anti-Semitism.
Right.
1945. That changed. We changed their entire fucking culture.
Right.
Like, Japan. Like, thousands of years of unbroken military tradition. The Bushido Code, never been conquered or defeated. 1945, we changed that. To the extent where their constitution forbids, like, they renounce warfare indefinitely. Right. So we broke their entire culture.
Through nuclear warfare, yeah.
Just killing everyone on islands in the Pacific. Yeah. But I mean, that's just a part of Japanese culture. They didn't quit. That's admirable. Like that they were willing to fight to the death, but at the end of the day, they lost the struggle.
Okay.
And then they lost their national identity, which was to the benefit of us, but it is what it is.
Yeah. And
But in terms of, like, the three examples of, like, pre-World War II Germany, Imperial Japan, and Afghanistan, like thousands of years of just acceptable child rape is probably the most disgusting one in the equation.
Yep.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
And, so there's that, the treatment of women. Like, I was in the aid station, one day hiding out from first sergeant. Like, I was hanging out with my medic buddies because I didn't want a police call, like, our area.
Cause
it's fucking horseshit. It's a garbage country. I don't need to pick up cigarette butts. Fuck them. And, this dude came in with his wife from the village right outside where we were, and his wife was all beat to shit. And we're like, what happened, man? Like, oh, she fell downstairs. Like, no, motherfucker. I've seen your stupid little mud hut. You don't have stairs. It's one story. And then it finally came out. He's like, oh, she can't get pregnant. We're like, you fucking beat her? And we kept prying. As it turned out, he had been a victim of bachabaze as a child.
Oh.
So his only idea of the human reproductive system was butt fucking people. So he got...
You're kidding me.
So he'd been butt-fucking this girl for God knows how long they were married. Then when she wouldn't get pregnant, was beating her ass. And then so we explained it to him and blew his fucking mind.
No pun intended, you're shitting me.
No, dude. So, like, it's shit like that, dude. Like, that the treatment of women is repugnant. There's also this thing where they fuck dudes, which is fine. Like, this, whatever, you want to fuck dudes, it's cool.
Yeah.
Like, I got told all the time, like, oh, pretty man, lip kiss, like, kiss me on lips. Like,
really?
Like, no, dude, like, I'm good. It didn't help because one of my buddies learned enough Pashtun to essentially tell them that I liked blowing dudes.
That's a good friend, dude.
Yeah, super good friend. Fuck him.
Pashtun is the language?
Pashtun is the language and the largest ethnic group in Afghanistan, the Pashtuns. Okay.
Out of all the news and things I've read, I've never heard that word in my life.
It's Pashtuns, and then
Pashtuns. Okay.
Then you have Tajiks, Turkmen, like a small group of, like, Indians, kinda.
Mm-hmm. This is all within Afghanistan.
Yeah, but Pashtuns are about, I believe, like 70 to 80% of the country.
Okay, and that's the biggest ethnic group, and the rest are smaller subsets.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then with the Pashtuns, besides Islam and Sharia law, they have an older code of conduct called Pashuwali, which is like their indigenous like code of conduct. And in some ways, it's pretty like liberal and progressive, like women can inherit, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it's also a very martial or like combative code of conduct about like honor and respect. Like that's where a lot of like in Afghanistan, at least, like honor killings come from and shit like that.
Okay.
But the Pashtunwali is what caused the British to, along with like the Gurkhas and the Sikhs in India, is labeled the Pashtuns like a martial culture. Like
okay.
With the British Empire, they had a whole list of what they considered martial cultures.
Okay.
Either to like as a way of planning for how to like put down rebellions.
Okay. Yeah.
Or to like what they did with the Gurkhas is recruit these people. Like, you're really good at fighting. Like, we should make military units out of you people.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you can't beat them, join them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Smart choice.
So there's that. The treatment of women. Oh, but so they have sex with dudes. That's where all the Man Love Thursday jokes come from, because traditionally the Muslim day of rest is Friday. So they need to get all their dude fucking out of their system before Friday, because they're not allowed to. But then this is the same culture that like stones to death homosexuals, and under Sharia law, homosexuality. So yeah, I just saw the look on your face.
Yeah.
I don't know what could cause you in Afghanistan to get killed for being gay when everyone's fucking dudes. Like, I don't know if it's like they see you rolling around in your shitty like Hyundai listening to Liberace or like your shoes are too fabulous or something like that.
Yeah, maybe if your shoes are more fabulous than yours.
Like, and it's just, it's really weird. Like, it's like, okay, like, I don't understand, like...
And that was, I mean, that's literally, like... All of them are, I mean, the majority that you saw or encountered were homosexual. The guys that you that looked at, and they did not look flamboyantly homosexual.
No, they're just, but, like, normal dudes.
And
like,
they're all...
But they would be holding hands with dudes and, like, kissing each other. And,
That is...
The only people that rejected that whole thing were, like, the younger kids who had, like, grown up under American occupation. And I think that might be from the influx, because that's how they get the internet, like, movies.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, the local economy around, like... cops, FOBs, and like military bases, airfields in Afghanistan is usually based on illegally downloaded movies, cigarettes, and snack foods that they sell soldiers.
Okay, yeah.
So
they're Americanizing them.
Yeah, so they'll download these movies, watch them.
Give them some porn, give them some movies, give them some cheeseburgers and cigarettes. Cool.
The music and stuff like that. So like the younger generation, like I never went to Kabul, but I had friends who had, like that's where they had gone. And they said like, dude, girls are walking around like no burkas or habibs, like looking hot as fuck in like jeans. Like dudes are like listening to like American music. Like they're just like Kabul sound awesome. Like, I'd much rather been there instead of in shitty Pesh River Valley.
And that's the younger generation you're saying mm-hmm. that's doing that. Okay, but that's fascinating that you're talking about that the older generation of these Pashtuns in Afghanistan are fucking guys holding hands walking down the street.
But
they also can get stoned for home. You don't.
Yeah.
And you don't know the difference. I mean, you don't.
I mean, I've thought about it a lot. Like I.
Because I
want to Google it, but I don't even know how to approach. Like, you know, like. Like, I don't even know what to type into the computer to get the answer on
no,
that.
No, I was just wondering if you had heard anything over there about why that contrast is.
No,
that's an extreme juxtaposition.
Dude, we tried not to bring up, like, dude fucking with them.
Yeah.
Like, because one time we sent the same dude who learned enough Pashtun to tell them that I liked blowing dudes, evidently.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, hey, man, go to the interpreter tent and find our interpreter, John. And like 20 minutes later, I find this motherfucker like sitting on the ground, like smoking, like real, like worried looking. I'm like, hey, dude, like what happened? He's like, well, I went into the terp tent and John wasn't there. I'm like, okay. He's like, I saw two of the other interpreters fucking each other and they just looked at me and didn't stop. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, so did you get an interpreter? He's like, no, I left and I've been smoking. Okay, fair enough.
That's cool. Yeah, so you see these stark contrasts in this society. What were some things that, you know, happened that, you know, maybe now you regret, or things that like kept you up like, damn, did we really need to do that? Or were there things like that took place?
Just, like anytime we got into like firefights and stuff, like, not every time, but a few times, like civilians got hurt, like kids, or like, you know, when IEDs went off, like, and like my company never got hit by them, but it happened in our AO, and we did foot patrols all the time to like try and find these things, route clearance, but they were timing them just right to get them in there. And like our sister companies might get hit, and we were usually on QRF to go out and help. And just like, I don't know, like dudes who you're not like friends with, but you know,
right.
Like, and you've seen them with their family and kids, yeah. at you know, brigade mandatory fun events where you're told it's voluntary, but you have to show up and have fun, but you never do, cause it sucks. Cause Sergeant Major's there being a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And, just like, fuck, dude. Or like, you know, like anytime kids got hurt, like just the like brutality of the culture, it's like, they're just like kids being kids and like their parents like beating them with sticks or something, or like kids trying to get candy from us, and the parents, you could tell they didn't like us, and like, be like, no, go away, American. Like, give you a little hand wave. Like, dude, I'll fucking murder you. Like, get the fuck away from my truck. Like, shit like that. And just, it is a beautiful culture. Or like, okay, parts of the culture are beautiful besides the kid fucking, but it's a beautiful country is what I meant to say. And then, like, anytime you're up on like a mountain, you can see like, wow, this place is really beautiful. But then you'll see like the burning garbage, or like, the Pesh River is just full of shit and garbage. It's like, you guys have a beautiful, like, unspoiled country, and you just destroy it. Like, and I don't know why. Like, it's, I don't know. It's just like a brutal place to live.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it's all relative. Like,
sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cause there are good people there, but it just feels like even like some of the good people are, by comparison to like, you know, normal Western standards, horrible fucking people.
Yeah, and that's the tough part, isn't it? Don't you think, man? It's hard, like you said, dude, with those cultural differences. It's impossible not to look at the people and be like, "What the fuck is going on?" No matter where you go. But at the same point, it's like, it's so hard with the whole cultural differences. It's just different, man. Like, it's hard not to put your own judgment on those other people,
or
no matter
like
where they
the
are.
The bullshit the Taliban pulls, where like Taliban fighters will fight.
Yeah.
But by and large, what they'll often do is find like locals wherever they are and be like, "Hey, we'll pay you X amount of money to go fuck up the Americans."
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, if you don't do it, we're going to kill your family.
Oh, okay.
So these dudes are like, fuck, I can make money if I don't do it. Like, you know,
well, there's one option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm kind of fucked. So like, a lot of times you're fucking up dudes who don't necessarily hate you. It's just they're kind of being forced.
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Like, because it's like, dude, like, but then again, it's like, why are you guys allowing the Taliban to come into your village? Like, I know you guys have weapons of your own. Like, why isn't your village fucking up the Taliban?
Yeah. Are there more Taliban than there are of the villages, or?
No, like, I mean, villages usually fall into one of three categories. Taliban village, where they'll straight up fly the white Taliban flag and just be like, yeah, the Taliban rules. Yeah. The indifferent ones that don't like the Taliban, but they don't like us, or friendly villages that are like, America rules. And those, like, usually the closer you get to a military base or anywhere where troops are, you find the more friendly villages, because they've benefited from proximity to the U.S. military, either from food, like resources, like internet, business, shit like that.
Yeah.
And Taliban villages, like, unless you like literally kill every military age male, very rarely do they change to non-Taliban village.
Okay.
And like, historically, military age male means 16 to like 55. But with Islamic countries, you have to drop it and raise it from like, you know, 13 to fuck, maybe even 70, like 60 maybe.
As long as they can still walk, they're...
Yeah, because like, it definitely, like, their culture and the way of life, like in the rural areas, ages you and hardens you way faster. Yeah. Like, you might be like, damn, what's that 20-year-old doing? And you're like, oh, shit, he's 14.
Wow, okay. Like,
they just look rough, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's crazy. So what, like, after the things you saw, Like, were there some firefights that occurred in that area that you were in?
We, if we were on patrol, we got shot at or into firefights.
Yeah, how often were those types of occurrences? You out for a daily patrol, what's your chances when you walk out that barrack door that you're thinking, I'm 90% sure I'm going to get shot at today? 50%, 10%.
It was usually like a good 80% chance.
Really?
Unless it was raining, because Hodge, the Afghanis, they don't have the best, like, they still have to deal with, like, the bubonic plague in that country.
Yeah.
So they don't go out in the rain usually unless it's something important. Like, they can't afford to get sick because that might be a death sentence.
Okay.
So, which isn't a problem for, like, friendly villages because they know they can get American first aid.
Yeah.
But if you're Taliban, I mean, it varies. Like, you could, you know, be Taliban or unfriendly to Americans, but then utilize us for shit. That does exist. But, like, so, like, once a week we had to, like, QAQC our trucks, like, make sure they were good, do maintenance so they didn't break down on patrol, because that would have been unfortunate. And that was during our rest period. And even then, like, there's a good chance we were going to get, like, at least, like, a 60 to 70% chance we were going to get mortared or hit with recoilless rifle fire at some point. So even during, like, your downtime, you know.
That's unbelievable.
Your hypothetical downtime.
That's, like, unbelievable.
But, like, leaving the gate, like, there's always, like, a good 75 to 80% chance. Like, dude, if it was, like, nice out, like, yeah, dude, at some point we're going to get shot at. And you would always knew what village. Like,
yeah,
like,
okay.
Yeah, in this village, we're going to get shot at from that same fucking hill. Or we're going to get shot at from inside the village, and these motherfuckers are just going to disperse into the town.
And then you can't respond? Or it depends on the situation?
Well, it depends on the situation. Yeah. Like, you had rules of engagement, like, you weren't supposed to, unless you actually saw a weapon, they're actively shooting, you weren't supposed to shoot. But, I mean, what happens on patrol kind of stays on patrol.
Yeah.
However you write it up, I mean, it's really up to you for what happens.
Yeah, right, where things happen and then... Because once something happens like that, the lower people aren't going to...
No, because, like, you...
Whistleblow, you know what I mean?
It's like before deployment, I always heard, like, fuck them. Like, they're assholes, like, dirty savages. And fuck the kids, too. They're the worst. And I was like, oh, you're just an uneducated southerner from Georgia. I'm going to be different. And I tried for a week. I gave candy and bullshit to kids. Tried to win them over. And then one day, I ran out of candy, and all these kids were like, oh, mister, candy. Like, give us candy. Like, candy, pen. Give me pen. Be like,
yeah.
Dude, I'm out of candy. And this one kid in front of their little group goes, when you leave here, you go boom and die. And then his buddy hucked a rock and hit me in the mouth. And that's when I was like, okay, game on, motherfucker.
Yeah,
so, man. I started peeing in water bottles and then mixing lemonade powder with it.
Oh, geez.
And making kids fist fight for the tasty treat to get my revenge for getting hit in the mouth with a rock.
Yeah.
Because it chipped my fucking tooth and it hurt.
Yeah.
Which I regret doing that. Like, that was a pretty immature response, but, you know, like, rage does well over.
Yeah, man. Situational. I can only imagine that effect that it has on you, wearing on you, grinding on you day after day.
Oh, yeah. And you just get so fucking sick of seeing the same people's fucking face, hearing their voice.
Hearing the same stupid jokes.
Yeah. Eating the same food.
Yeah.
We had showers. They got blown up while we were on patrol.
I mean, that right there, that sentence that you just said, dude, I think that would blow the mind. It blows my mind to sit here as a civilian. I think it would blow the majority of Americans' minds.
I didn't get a proper shower for over 4 months.
We had showers. They got blown up while we were on patrol. That's unbelievable, dude.
Or, like, I ate the local food. I got dysentery. Like, I shit my pants a lot. Like, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, being on patrol and having to poop in, like, an ammo can. Like, it's just, like, horrible shit, dude.
Or
just, like, where, like, you're just so dirty, like, where it won't wash off, like, because you're breathing in all this bullshit and it gets in your pores. So no matter how hard you scrub yourself, like, you can just still smell yourself.
Yeah.
You're just like, ugh.
I mean, and how can you not turn into a, you know, disgruntled, cynical human?
Or, like,
do you know what I mean?
Oh.
I mean, is that what occurred? I mean, I would.
So we're going to bring this one full circle.
Okay,
that girl that broke
it.
Up with me.
Okay. We're doing throwback. Nice.
She went full hippie while I was deployed. And she hit me up while I was deployed. And was like, before I deployed, she had told me that if me and my friends die, we're dying for nothing because 9/11 was an inside job.
Okay.
So then when I was deployed, she hit me up on Facebook. And was like, hey, I heard that you guys are just guarding opium fields over there for the drug lords to protect, like, the CIA's drug trade. I'm like, dude, I haven't seen one fucking opium plant or, like, poppy since I've been here. I have seen a bunch of angry motherfuckers with machine guns and RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
It's just shit like that. Like, people that don't get it. Or, like, I have this other buddy when
the internet breeds conspiracies on both sides to the extreme.
Oh, dude, like...
And I always thought the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Like, sure, does the CIA do sketchy things? Yeah. Is the U.S. military being used to guard poppy plants? Probably not, because the Afghanis do a pretty fucking good job of guarding them.
Right. Yeah. Great, yeah.
And we tried to destroy the poppies.
Yeah.
But then that just created more...
It's not going to do anything.
More insurgents... Because we were pissed that they were trying to tell them what crops they could grow.
Plus, don't take people's drugs. Like, that's a pretty, anyone should know that.
Well, yeah, like,
you don't make people's drugs.
We tried to destroy their poppy fields and be like, oh, grow wheat or like vegetables or something. Like,
do you know how much money I can make off opium versus?
It all came down to money.
Yeah.
So we were like, all right, keep doing your poppies. Pretty much it was just like a, you know, whatever, fuck these people.
Yeah.
So, just shit like that, dude. Or like, I have this other buddy who, when I came home, I was talking to him, and he's like, you know, man, I really like you, but I don't like what you do for a living. You're just another cog in the machine, man. It's just like, hey, fuck this guy, because he's been a first-year punk for, like, 10 years. Like, he never got beyond Crass or, like, the Casualties. He never, like, matured as a person. And two, a cog in what machine? Like, there isn't, like, everyone has this idea, like all the Bernie Sanders supporters and all that, that they live in some right-wing, like, totalitarian dictatorship with, you know, the Republic or the GOP's boot on their neck. Let's be fair. We live in a shit-lib country. Like, the Republican Party's reviled. Every social cause is given in praise, and the military's shit on. And anyone with any, like even if your occupation has, like, the tendencies of, like, something, like, right-wing, like the military.
Yeah.
Like, you're immediately shit on and just like, oh, you know, the U.S. is the biggest terrorist in the world. Like, get the fuck out of here, dude. Like, never terrorized anyone unless they were a fucking piece of shit bad person. Like, the things we do to Afghanistan.
You don't feel over there that you, like, I mean, you, that you personally saw that you.
No, there was no, like, direct acts of just, like, cruelty for cruelty's sake. Okay, like, cruel things did happen, but that's the nature of what was happening.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Like, I'm sure for your non-combatants, it's horrible to have, like, the world's superpower and the local, like, you know, homegrown terrorist group duking it out in your town and your buildings getting fucked up.
Yeah, that wouldn't be pleasant, sure.
But at the same time, it's not like the non-combatants were like, we were never like, let's murder some civilians. Like, no, you just, it's like, hey, like, and usually they know when something's going to go down. Like, the Taliban doesn't want civilian casualties because it takes away from their cause.
Okay.
Like, how are you supposed to get the support of villages if you're killing their people as, like, and you're supposed to be...
That's strange, because my interpretation of the Taliban is that they are ruthless.
Oh, they
animals
are.
That kill their own people. That's, like, you know, but that's interesting
they do,
to say that.
They do, but, like, it's... I mean, it's like the mafia. Is it easier to, like... to do, like, the Pablo Escobar thing and just donate money and get people to, like, love you because you're helping out? Or is it easier to just terrorize everyone? It's ruling through respect or fear. Sure. Respect's always preferred.
Right.
But you always have the ability to go to fear if respect doesn't work.
Right. And they know that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty common thing just throughout history. Like, every culture has that. Like, it's...
Yeah.
If you can rule completely or get support without having to be the bad guy... That will always be preferred. That's...
Right, of course. And through fear, you can dominate, but it is short term and it's only in respite.
Yeah.
That's the only reason that they respect you.
And then and if
they
it goes will on crumble. Too long,
exactly.
Then crumbles. You get
yeah.
a counter group. Be like,
exactly.
No, fuck you.
Exactly. But I want to talk, so you did, you've gotten a lot of negative sentiments directed towards you.
Yeah.
A lot of it from you coming back and saying what you did and people just...
Oh, yeah, dude. Like, it'd be like, you
do
know,
they take out their feelings about what's going on and they just throw them on you?
I'm not sure. I feel like a lot of it, because people will, like, try and be supportive. Like, hey, if you ever need to talk, like, you can talk to me.
Yeah.
And when you try and do that and tell them the, like, no bullshit truth, they freeze up and they don't know how to respond. And then they immediately, like, distance themselves from it. So it feels like they just don't give a fuck. But right. It's probably because they just don't know what to do. They're like, oh, my God.
There's the... The truth is scary sometimes.
It is. Like, and then, like, because when you're deployed, nothing matters. All that matters is what you're doing, your dudes, if you're a team leader, like I was when I was deployed, keeping your weapon clean, making sure everything's good. Just making sure that nothing can go wrong. and try not to get killed or everybody's to get killed. That's all that matters. So, okay. Like all the like normal bullshit you deal with in like daily life, like maybe your girlfriend's being a bitch or your parents are being assholes or you hate your job, your boss is being a dick sucker. Like shit like that doesn't really matter. It's just like day by day, like, okay, today ends, you go to sleep, wake up, new day, and all that shit doesn't matter. But then when you get home, it all comes back. And your shitty little brain's like, hey, asshole, remember all that horrible shit you saw and did? Like, it's time to deal with that. And, like...
Is that what's going on now?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. Like, I've refused to confront things and just, you know, put them off.
Like
but,
what?
I
know we just met, so yeah. Every day, but whatever you want to share.
Like,
man.
Dead friends, things that went wrong when civilians got hurt, like... things I did personally that I regret doing. Yeah. Like I shouldn't have done that. That was the bad response. Like, shit like that. And then like it sometimes like when it's really bad, like you feel like there's no absolution for things you've done.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just don't want to be around your friends or people you care about. Like you're going to somehow infect them or poison them, or they're just going to like be able to sense like, the perceived like blackness of like your soul.
Mm-hmm.
So like you have to like try and hide it, but that doesn't work because it bleeds through and it comes out in weird ways, man. Like if someone is acting erratic or like, let's say you have like an irresponsible friend that you can't rely on.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you see his irresponsibleness and then subconsciously you link that to this person's unreliable. And because of that, people are going to die because he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Okay.
So then there's not a lot of leeway in your emotions. Like there's no like real shades of gray. It becomes real black and white. Like you're either happy or you're fucking sad. You're like complete blackout rage. Like there's no like anger, irritated. It just goes from like baseline to something happens, just like rage or like something bad happens instead of like, you know, mildly bummed. It's just like soul cripplingly like sad.
Oh, okay.
Like
just extremes.
It just extremes.
And that occurred after you got back.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
And, or like your fight or flight response,
okay,
just like,
yeah.
Like, I don't like crowds. Like malls are pretty much no go. Cause it's too similar to like weird, like Middle Eastern bazaars, which is like people walking around being loud. Like you're looking for like threats or like, okay, like let's say I'm out in the open right now or like in a city, be like, oh, window. Like that window's open. Like I can get hit from there. That pothole probably has an IED.
And how many tours did you do total?
I did one, because then I should have stayed in the Army, honestly, because when I was getting out, they were deploying again, and I wish I would have been on that one. But I got out, for this girl, and then I was home for 2 weeks out of the Army, and she decided that was a good time to, start sucking her coworker's dick.
a lot of that going around.
Yeah. Story of my life, man. You know, just,
yeah. Then how long ago was that when you got back?
I redeployed in October of 2012.
Oh, you redeployed again? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I came home in October 2012.
Okay.
So I was deployed during the majority of 2012, and then I was still in the Army for another year, and everything seemed fine because I was still in the Army.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I was now the, you know, deployed team leader. So I, for like the new privates coming in, like had to like, you know, set a good example and all that, teach them because we knew a deployment.
We were still staying busy.
Yeah. Staying busy. It's when you're left to your own devices that you start chasing ghosts.
It's an excellent description.
Yeah. And,
so that was 2 years ago that you got out of the Army completely.
It was about 2 years.
And that's when it started to slowly creep up on you.
Yeah, creep up, because then I went into the reserve. So once a month, like, that shit washes away, because I'm back in Army mode now.
But 29 days, it's there.
But for, you know, 29 days
that
a month,
little,
it's just...
That demon's in the back of your head.
It's just there.
What'd you do to cope? Reach for the bottle?
Well, I didn't drink until I was 25. I turned 25 in Afghanistan. My birthday was horrible.
You didn't have a sip of alcohol until you were 25?
Well, like, I'd have a beer here and there, but I didn't drink. Like, I didn't party. Okay. I smoked cigarettes. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I was always a responsible one, DD, you know. Like, both my parents were fucking drunkards, so I didn't have an interest in it. But
on the
way home from Afghanistan is when I started drinking heavily, and then that just never stopped.
Yeah.
And then when I got out of the Army, like, I had some money saved up and, you know, got BAH, like, for school from the GI Bill, and a lot of that's just gone to the bars. Yeah, and yeah, I'm trying to put a curb on that, but it's just fucking rough. And the VA is a nightmare. Like, he, like,
that's what I've heard lately. A couple other podcasts I listen to, they have ex-military guys on and things I read, and that the VA is just a total shit. It's just a bureaucratic mess of where it's just extremely inefficient. People can't get seen for a month just to get in and just to be seen.
Oh, a month would be good timing. Like, really? I called before and they're like, oh, you know, let's say it's January. They're like, oh, the next opening we have is April. You know, see you then.
They're in dire need of nurses and doctors. Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I was like, you know, I'm tired of feeling this way. Like, I want to be a normal person. And so I go to, like, therapy once a week at the VA.
Yeah, cool.
And it's just, it's a vicious process because they're like, okay, we need a detailed account of like a traumatic event. And then every time you go there, it's like, imagine like a river that's just calm or like a pond. It's just calm. Maybe below there's some stuff going on. But then going to those appointments, just like a fucking industrial dredge comes through. And then instead of being calm, it's just like just churning and
shit. Your psyche you're talking about?
Yeah, it's just horrible, dude. It's like
reliving just, it.
Yeah. Or it's like, okay, so you want me to just like, talk about, you know, oh yeah, so this one time it was really, you know, chill, like got to see what, you know, and smell what a human body, you know, looks like after it's exposed to, you know, high explosives, or what a man looks like when he blows himself up like a suicide bomber and his face falls off, or, you know, when like a 7.62 round tumbles through Hodge's chest and then he's sitting there drowning in his own blood while you're searching them for intel, like stuff for like that. And it's just like, fuck, dude.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So, I mean, and then there's like shame and guilt that goes with it. Cause like, you know, pretty much everyone's grandparents were involved in World War II. So you feel like a shithead. Like, well,
why? What do you mean?
Because they fought like the Nazis and.
Oh, and you're saying that since you like, you're doing this war and it's not the same as that.
Yeah. So. And I can't get my shit together, but they came home and like built like the greatest economy a nation ever. It's like, how the fuck did they do it? And I feel like an asshole now.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't like, I can see how the mind would do that, but I mean, you don't, I wouldn't actually, you don't actually believe that, right? I mean,
it depends, dude. It depends, like,
on the day, or
because everything fluctuates. Like, sometimes I feel really, really bad for like taking human life. Like, I feel horrible about it.
Yeah,
like there could have been a different way. But then the next day it could be like, no, fuck that, I wish I'd killed more. Like, I wish we would have burnt every village to the ground and murdered everyone. Yeah, just extremes. Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of fluctuation. But the greatest part is every day I think about Afghanistan. And I just want to be back there. Like, I just want to do it again.
Really?
Yeah. Like, Iraq right now, I want to go fight ISIS. It would be great. If I got deployed right now, if I got a phone call, be like, hey, we're deploying, I'd probably do fucking cartwheels out of your house.
Can you do cartwheels?
Yeah, I can. You know, I'll figure it out.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Like, you know, and then that's another thing. Thanks for bringing that up. Is like, just the wear and tear on your body.
Yeah.
Like, I have like the knees of like an 80-year-old man. Like,
yeah.
The VA is like, oh, you're probably going to have knee replacement surgery before you're 40. Dude, I'm 28. Like, that's coming up quick.
And who's going to pay for that? Will they pay for it?
It depends. The VA, their payment is usually based on income. So if you don't have an income, it doesn't cost anything. Because I deployed within the last 5 years or 2 years or something like that, three, whatever their number is, I have free healthcare from the VA for 5 years. If you get like 100% disabled rating from the VA, you get TRICARE, like military healthcare, for free for the rest of your life, which would be, I mean, I don't think 100% should be like, dude, I think if you're over 50, they should just hand out the TRICARE.
Yeah.
Like, you broke people's bodies and it's like psyches. Like, dude, I can't maintain healthy relationships. Like, anytime, like, I have a girlfriend or something, and, like, they like being around me, I immediately question their sanity. It's like, how the fuck can you like being around me?
Yeah.
Well,
here's just to interrupt you real quick.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, what you're saying, I think it's, like, just typical human behavior, just unbelievably magnified, I would say. Because I think most people share those same sentiments of, like,
yeah,
this person actually, like, likes me, you know? Or today's a good day, and the next day is not so great, you know? But the problem is that you have all this, I mean, extreme burden that just, it exacerbates those normal human emotions that everyone goes through.
Yeah.
What you described, everyone goes through, but you have them magnified to 10 because of those incidents.
Oh yeah,
because
I used to have those like before the military, be like, oh, I can't believe this girl like likes me, like, yeah, but it's
right.
It's not like a sadness with that. It's like kind of insecure, unsure.
Sure, exactly, yeah.
But with this, it feels more like almost like a revulsion. Like, how the fuck do you like me? Like, if I told you the truth, you would run.
Yeah.
Like, and then people get mad. They're like, you won't open up to me. And it's like, if I do, you're not going to like being here.
Right, right.
So it's this whole, like, you're walking a fucking tightrope or, you know, there's no, like, and it always comes back to combat. Like, people will be telling stories about, like, coworkers and stuff. And, like, you don't, and I'll be like, yeah, like, my buddy, you know, he said something funny at work the other day. Haha. I'll be like, oh, I had this buddy in the army and he bought a fleshlight. And it was hilarious. It was the Avatar themed one. So it looked like, you know, like a cat's eye, and he was slinging it around, like shit like that. And everyone's just like,
hard to relate.
What? It was like, yeah, this one time, like I threw a hand grenade. And they're just like, okay, yeah. Like, you know,
And that's one of the biggest things I hear is the assimilation back into the civilian world because there's such a stark contrast.
Oh yeah. Like it's just
extremely difficult.
Like people will sit there and listen, but, like they don't have like a frame of reference. Like it's, I mean, even other veterans, like, I'll go to the VFW hall to drink, and, like, you know, Vietnam veterans are there. They're the primary group.
Uh-huh.
But, like, the military's so different between, I mean, it's even different between the initial invasion guys and the current guys. Like, so much has changed. Like, there'll always be, like, similarities. Like, you know, like, the military just doing dumb stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's enraging. But actual terms of combat, like the Vietnam guys, like you don't understand why the Vietnam guys did the things they did, like the search and destroy things, or just how they could tolerate taking like the losses they did, you know, 30, 40, 50% casualties in a platoon. And the Vietnam guys don't get like why we fought Iraq and Afghanistan the way we did. It's just, there's like a disconnect even between veterans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even between like Afghan and Iraq veterans. Cause like Afghanistan, at least where I was, it's a light infantryman's world. Like you don't, it's mountains. Like you have Kiowa helicopters instead of Apaches. You don't have the heavy support that they did in Iraq. The difference in Iraq was the insurgency was like actually trained like militarily by Sunnis who had gotten booted out of the army when we de-bathified the government. So even if they were just insurgents for religious reasons, they're getting like no bullshit, like military training from former like Republican Guard or just like Sunni army guys, like shit like that. So it's almost the difference between like the Wehrmacht in Germany in World War II and the Imperial Japanese Army is like the Germans, like we knew what to expect. Like it was a brutal, hard opponent, but there was like a respect, like by and large, they treated our POWs well and we treated theirs well. Okay, and there's like, we were fighting another Western European power.
Yeah.
It was the same mindset.
Okay. Yeah.
But with Japan, like the refusal to surrender, the suicidal fighting, just the like refusal to give up.
Yeah.
Like, and that just wears on you. Like when you see people blowing themselves up, like just standing there and fighting, like Taliban fighters, like fighting, like when we attacking with an inferior force against like armored trucks, fully loaded with infantrymen, with like air cover on station. It's just like, why do you keep fighting?
Yeah.
Like, just fucking die or surrender. Just stop. Like,
you're sick of seeing it?
Yeah, just sick of it, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but then you learn to like that. Like, oh, fuck yeah, firefight. Your body dumps all that, those fucking hormones.
Mm-hmm. Adrenaline such.
Oh, God.
It's like that good, huh?
Everything seems to slow down. Just fucking slinging rounds, like fucking rounds coming by you, just like crack, 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 crack. Fucking helicopters coming in, machine gunning shit, launching rockets, or like A-10s on station, just opening up with that 30mm gun, just brop. And it's awesome. Like, and it ruins everything else because like blowjobs are cool, but I'd rather be getting shot at.
Yeah, that mean, there is.
Like, hey, do you mind sucking my dick while you shove a gun in my face or something?
Totally, dude. There is nothing more visceral, and I would imagine to make you feel more alive than
life and death.
Life and death, dude.
Yeah,
completely.
But, you know, like kicking in a door, like doing like early morning raids, like where it's a high value target, like you know for a fact this motherfucker has been helping the Taliban. You fucking just breach his house, come in, grab him out of bed. He's confused and scared shitless. Like he has a bunch of people yelling in a language he doesn't speak. Like that felt good. Like you're taking the element, like an important element to the Taliban, where like the dudes who are giving them intelligence or like funding them or in some way helping them, be like, you just lost a logistical like fucking cornerstone.
Yeah.
So, and fuck those guys. Like we had an interpreter that, we found out had been working with the Taliban. So, we had to pull guard on him and sitting there talking to a dude who was essentially a Taliban guy, but he spoke perfect English. And he tried to lecture me. He's like, oh, how old are you? Like 25, man. Are you married yet? Like, no. Like, oh, you're getting old. You need to get married. I'm like, hey, dude, my life expectancy is like 84. Yours is like 58. Because we don't have the bubonic plague.
Yeah.
We don't just shit in creeks that people fall. I fell in a shit creek once, which is horrible. I don't know if you've had water mixed with human feces and refuse in your mouth and eyes, but it's not enjoyable.
No, I haven't, yeah.
Yeah. Just shit like that, dude. I don't miss those parts.
Yeah. And
there's parts of the army I definitely don't miss, like fucking safety briefs or just like the paperwork or just like being at work for no discernible reason, like in America. Just like, let us go home. It's Friday.
Yeah.
Like I have drinking to do.
Right.
But yeah, I miss the army. Like it was a real good decision. I mean, it kind of ruined some aspects of my life, like, but by and large, like, yeah, it was great.
What parts do you say are ruined now? Did you think they're irreplaceably?
Sometimes it feels like that. Yeah. It's just like, you know, like
irrevocably or what's is that the right word?
Yeah, irrevocably.
Irrevocably, yeah.
No, I feel like, I don't know, man. Like, sometimes I feel like I'm probably going to die alone. Like, I saw an old couple the other day at the coffee shop. They're old as fuck, probably been together for like 40 years.
But yeah.
That'll probably never be me.
Yeah.
But that's just a feeling. But that's just that feeling of like, you don't want to like infect people with like the things you've done. And I'm sure that hopefully that will fade. Even though I talked to a Korean War veteran, I was like, hey man, does it get better? He's like, no. It's like, fuck. But,
I don't know any, I can't, relate to anything, but I mean, goddamn, like shit. Let's hope that there's.
I really hope
that there's hope for improvement. I mean, have you seen improvement in yourself in the past 2 years from where you are today talking to me versus 2 years ago?
Recently, it's gotten real bad.
Really?
Like, it's ups and downs. Like, but, you know, every time it, like, recovers and it's on the rise, it seems to get better. So,
yeah.
But every time it goes down, it seems to get worse. So, it,
okay.
Like, it's the waves are just lengthening.
Okay.
But, you know.
Does you're doing psychotherapy right now, you said?
Yeah.
Does that help?
It feels like it. Like, there is, like, a mild catharsis. But then, like, because it's hard to talk, like, during the appointment. But then afterwards, like, you will talk about some stuff. Then afterwards, you'll just, at least I do personally, dwell on some aspects for longer than I should.
Yeah.
I should probably stop drinking, because when I do drink, it's a 50-50 chance whether I'm going to just be fun, you know, hilarious guy all night, or just fucking major downer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're having a good day, let me tell you about dead kids. Yeah. Like, that sort of shit.
Yeah.
What
do you think, what have you done thus far that has helped most?
I don't know, man. I haven't really felt like I'd done much. It's just, it just kind of just going with the flow. So probably need to find some way to like take a stance, like, no, fuck that. Like,
or to release the aggression.
Yeah.
There's because it's such a big factor right now. And I think it's unbelievable horseshit that the government would send. And I don't care if you agree with the politics of why we're over there or you think that it's a fucking conspiracy. There's people that signed up to go over there and sacrifice their lives for something that they found honorable.
Worthwhile.
Worthwhile, okay? Like you. So, whether you agree with it or not, it is happening. And then when they come back, you come back and it's, I saw the, like you said, all these horrible things. Need to talk to someone. We'll see you in 4 months.
Well, it's also the climate of the army. Like, a lot of dudes don't seek help.
Atrocity.
Because they tell you, they'll tell you, like, hey, if you need help, talk to someone. But there's also the stigma where they're like, oh, you need to talk to mental health. Okay, pussy.
Pussy, yeah.
And, you know, so there's that. There's.
But I bet you those guys that say that would benefit from it.
Probably, but those are usually like your career dudes who.
Yeah. Okay.
They definitely like released a little bit of their humanity, and they're just in army mode. That's okay. What they are.
Copy
is
that.
A
yeah.
soldier.
Yeah. Copy that. Yeah.
And you see it too in cops, like mm-hmm. like you know like your like career like sergeant.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that.
Well, they're in so deep. I mean, their walls are up. They're thick. By the time you get to 50 and you're a career guy, or whatever, those are thick walls, man. You're not getting through them.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
And you lose part of that where, like, you don't. There's not a lot of, like, mercy or empathy left because it's just supposed to be like, hey, like, why aren't you executing what you're supposed to do? Why is this a problem for you? And then, like, since they're older dudes, they've usually been in for a while. If they weren't in the initial invasion, or if they're real old, they were in Desert Storm and then this current war.
Giving up a piece of their humanity, that's a great way to put it.
I mean, but then again, like, they joined at, like, 17 or 18, 19. Yeah,
that's the only world they know.
Yeah, and they've been doing it for, like, 20 years. Yeah. Like, 20 years of, like, being in the infantry, like, your body has to hurt every day.
Yeah.
Like, you've seen so much bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, deployed, like, at least 4 times, usually.
Yeah.
If not 5, 6, 7, depending on what their job was.
Right.
Like, it's, you know, it's just really hard to connect with your friends that haven't done something similar. Like, if you have, like, a paramedic friend or a cop friend or like a firefighter friend, they're still like, you understand. You may not tell them everything because it's different, but like even your military friends, like it's the easiest to talk to them, but it doesn't really help anything because even with them, you're holding stuff back because you don't want to look like a pussy.
Right.
Because you have that expectation of your military friend, like, why are you being weak? Like, you're not.
So you wouldn't tell some friends that you go to psychotherapy?
Some of my friends know, like, I have to do homework for it. And the other day I was doing it and some of my friends were like, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm doing homework. They're like, for what? And I was like, psychology class. And they're like, oh, what type of psychology? I giggled to myself. I'm like, abnormal psych.
And, nice, dude. Good cover.
And, they're and like, okay, cool.
And you just didn't want me the pussy.
Yeah, I didn't. Because then one of two things I found happen when you try and talk to people, either A, they treat you like you're made of fucking porcelain and like, oh, are you okay, buddy? And like try and hold you like a, you know, a Fabergé egg.
Yeah.
Or they treat you like, whoa, like crazy guy over here.
Yeah.
Like, and like, I don't like either. Like, I'm a good dude. Like, I can be a funny guy.
You know,
I'm a nice guy, but.
Very conversational.
But, you know, I don't like being treated like I'm some delicate little fucking virginal flower. And I definitely don't like being treated like a crazy person. Like, I'm not like eating my own shit
because you're not either one.
But that's the thing is that's how
you're a human with issues that can be resolved. Like,
yeah,
it's not that fucking yeah.
Or like when people like oh, I don't know what the problem is, like it's not like it's a real war. Like, the fuck do you mean real war, motherfucker?
Yeah,
like, well, it's not like it's like World War II. It's like, you're absolutely right, I did not amphibiously invade Europe. But someone shooting a machine gun at you is the same in German, Japanese, and Pashtun.
Right.
So.
And that's the disconnect. That's the massive disconnect between, which is why what you're doing right here is exemplifying courage. Because that's the disconnect between civilians and people going over there, what you did in doing it. There is nothing, I can't, like, you can't describe experience. You can, but like, unless you live it. You're just imagining what it could be like.
Oh, but like, and you know here's the problem with that.
You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah.
Because World War II and Vietnam. All right. World War II, there's the draft. So.
Right.
Even if you didn't have a child, brother, father, or whatever who was in the military fighting, there's a good chance you were working on the war effort, like building Liberty ships, tanks, or planes.
Okay.
So like, you had a vested interest.
Right.
And there was like pro-US propaganda, like, you know, support our boys, you know,
right.
Fucking war bond drive. So like, you had a vested interest. Vietnam. Again, if you didn't have anyone over there you knew, like, it was on TV every night, just, like, combat footage. So, like, you had a vested interest, whether you wanted, like, to support the guys, or you were against the war, you just wanted our dudes home.
Okay.
Or even you had a vested interest if you hated the military and the dudes, like, you had a vested interest in ending the war just for humanity's sake.
Right.
There isn't live footage. It's a fully volunteer army. It's a very small segment of the country that does enlist. Like, so unless you have a friend, brother, father, something that's in, and even then you don't really have a vested interest because it's not in your face. It doesn't seem to be a priority to America. There's no like, hey, America, let's fucking end this. We got to do this. Like, you know, let's come together and step forward. It's more like, our military is going to go do this. for us. And you're just like, oh, I'm going to sit back and eat my fucking Nutella.
Nutella, dude. Do you like Nutella?
No, I don't at all.
You don't like Nutella?
No, I think it's fucking gross.
Oh, dude.
I don't like...
I almost got you a Costco tub of it, so oh, I'm glad well, thanks, I didn't, bud. Dude. Yeah.
You know, I don't like Nutella. I don't like fucking pumpkin spice. I think it's fucking gross. It tastes like elf jizz.
Well, we're not white girls, you know?
So. I do like white girls.
Yeah, we like white girls, just not pumpkin spice.
Oh, busty amateurs are my vice. Or like, you know, girls with tattoos, just...
Oh, yeah, dude. Those, dude, you know what my favorite is? Just a little, tangent here. Brunette girls, like...
With big tits and tattoos? Because you're preaching to the choir.
I'm more of a butt guy, but like the girl that's really pretty and just maybe has like a nose ring and like a little half sleeve.
I know that one.
Just like the little edge is, oh man.
Well, see, here's my problem with
drive me crazy
with butts and tits is usually it's the boobies that attract me. Like, oh, those look cool and I want to touch them and do stuff to them.
Yeah.
But then during the act, I'm like, yeah, I want to play with this butt, you know, while I hit from behind real quick or something like that.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah. It's sure, they're both cool.
But it's
sure.
Like a yin and yang. I need both.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a big, like, balance, you know, Sir Mix-a-Lot butt.
Right.
Like, I'm into small butts. Balance. I'm into big butts. Yeah.
Balance.
Also, it doesn't have to be comically sized boobs.
No. Just a like, nice balance. Proportional.
I just need to be able to, like, slap that under boob and see those jiggle.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. A little jiggle.
You like
for
that
sure.
Shit, girl?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no, you're right, dude. That is totally, you nailed it with, like, the disconnect on... People sitting there, they flip on CNN.
They have no vested interest.
More troops going by. Oh, that's interesting. And you know the other thing, too, I think, is that there is no end date.
Yeah.
And now they've started. Obama's pulling out troops, Afghanistan, doing things like that. But we're going to have bases there and people there for the foreseeable future. I mean.
Honestly, what could pull together America is ISIS. Because the problem with Iraq and Afghanistan was it was like a hydra. Like, it was just different cells, different groups. Like, we could kill one and then two more would spring up. With ISIS, yeah, it's an insurgent organization, but it's like the difference between the traditional mafia with a top-down leadership and the Camorra in northern Italy, which was more like cells with no upper leadership. Well, the mafia was allowed, because of the top-down and the direct like power like structure, they could rapidly seize stuff, but they're easier to defeat because you take out the leadership, you cut off the head, the snake dies. The Camorra never got as powerful, but they're definitely harder to fight because you could take down one cell, two more are going to spring up.
Mm-hmm.
So with ISIS, it's they do have a top down. They're trying to form a caliphate, like a no bullshit like country, and they have a no bullshit country
mm-hmm.
in the areas they control, and that's what we're good at, is fighting no bullshit countries and fucking them up. We fucked up Iraq. 1 week, the like fourth or fifth largest army in the world kneeled before us. And we did it twice. We kicked the shit out of them 10 years apart. So with ISIS, like, we don't even have to do what we're not good at, and that's the occupation. Even though we're really good at that now, we have 14 years of experience.
Yeah, right.
We really just have to roll through, fuck up ISIS, and the Kurds and Iraqi army can roll behind us and do what they need to do to pacify that insurgency. They live there. They know who the enemy is. They know they can go into the towns and be like, you know, it's what France did after we liberated fucking France, is they got rid of the collaborators. Like, oh, you helped work with the Germans. Oh, you were a whore and just slept with German officers. Yeah. And they got punished and got rid of those elements.
Okay.
So, like, people want to be like, oh, that's barbaric. You're going to let the Iraqi army or Kurds just, you know, kill people. Summary executions. Like, we allowed that shit all over Europe. Like,
yeah,
we had no issue with the denazification or I don't know, like getting rid of the fascist elements of
denazification. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Like, we had no issue with that. Yeah. Like, oh, these were the corroborating governments of, you know, like Quisling in Norway or Vichy France, or, you know, any of the conquered nations where they set up like far right fascist governments.
Yeah.
We had no problem with the local civilian population killing those elements.
Yeah.
We let should we have arrested Mussolini and tried him as a criminal? Yeah, we should. That would have been the moral thing to do. Instead, we let him get fucking lynched by his own people.
Are you a history major?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. You're good, man. You know a lot of stuff. Right? You know a lot of stuff. Yeah. A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, like, with all that that has happened and how people see it on the news now and stuff and where you're at, where do you see yourself going to? Because this PTSD that you're experiencing and this inability to to relate to civilians sometimes. It's affecting a lot of people, a lot of veterans that are coming back.
Yeah, it's,
and are having to now, you know, rehabilitate into society.
Yeah, and also to go back to the World War II analogy that people like to throw out is, I'm pretty sure on these numbers, but, you know, I might be a little off. I guess during World War II, your average infantryman would see 30 days of combat a year.
Okay.
In Vietnam, because of the introduction of the helicopter and just the way we fought, that jumped up to over 100 days of combat a year.
Okay.
And now with this current war, because we've lowered the size of sectors and are very, like, precise in what units are doing, that's just gone up too. So the bigger war, you technically saw less combat. Was it still brutal and vicious? Yeah. Absolutely. But it was also a way harder culture that our grandparents came from, like the Depression. Like,
right, yeah.
You know, in the South, there were still two drinking fountains. Like,
right.
You know, like a gay culture was an underground, unspoken thing.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Fuck, if you said you wanted to be transsexual, you'd probably get institutionalized in 1940.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's all relative to the society that breeds these conflicts. So, but the more days of combat you add, it's like idling a car too long. If you idle a car too long, too hard, that the idol's not going to come back down. Like, you're just going to wear that shit out. And we're just wearing dudes out. That's fine. Like, I'm willing to do it. I'll do it all over again. I have no problem doing that.
And you'd be willing to accept the repercussions?
That's fine.
Yeah.
Completely fine. Because if I don't, some 18-year-old will do it. And I'd much rather, I've already done it, I'll do it again and suffer more. And, you know, that dude doesn't have to.
Yeah.
It's also like, sometimes people say, like, oh, we should bring back the draft. Be like, no. Like, sometimes I think, like, yeah, we should. Just so, like everyone will have some idea and understand.
In it together, kind of.
But then I think about it, I'm like, no, like, we chose to do this. Like, we can carry this burden without doing that. That's the point of having a
volunteer. You want people there that want to be.
That's the point of volunteer military. It's, you have the dudes that want to be fighters. And they let you pick your job.
Yeah.
Like, no one ever joins the army and be like, well, I didn't know I was going to get this shitty job. Like, motherfucker, they let you pick your job. There's like 280 jobs. Yeah. And there's only like, hold on, infantry, artillery, cav scout, tanker, medic, military policeman, and special forces. There's seven jobs where you're going to probably directly see combat out of like 280. So be a fucking cook or like an HR representative if you want to serve your country, but you don't know if you want to fight.
Yeah.
There's only seven of them. I mean, dude, if those were odds at casinos, like 7 out of 280, I'd be a fucking millionaire.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, 280, yeah, you get what I'm saying.
I got it. Yeah.
I mean, 7 to, yeah. If it was reversed.
If it was 7 out of 280, you wouldn't gamble ever.
No, absolutely not.
If you're the casino and at 7 out of 280, you'd be a millionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it.
But, it's just shit like that. Like, you know, it's just hard to like if you want to talk to someone, like one of your friends, it's hard to like explain, like picking up pieces of your friends and putting them in a body bag, which it's actually not a body bag. On the tag, it's labeled pouch, comma, human remains.
Pouch, comma, human remains.
Which I thought was kind of funny the first time I saw it. And then it became immediately not funny
when we actually
had to use them.
Yeah.
And just shit like that, man.
I mean, because, yeah, that stuff is, that's hard to, first of all, it's hard to talk about. And you don't, like you said, you don't want to be the guy bringing down the room. But at the same time, you're like, well, shit, man, I got to, and that's where I guess psychotherapy comes in. You know, an interesting thing that I've heard lately that has, God, dude, it's high. It's like 70 to 80% success rate is using MDMA.
I read that.
MDMA supported, like, as a supplement, where it's psychotherapy and it's like, it's regular psychotherapy, and then out of those like four sessions a month, one of them is MDMA supported, and it has an unbelievable.
But I don't even know how to broach that, because like anytime,
I don't think the VA does that, but I know they're doing study. They're really getting into it, and they're trying to approach that with veterans, especially. There's this huge push on PTSD, on like how do we solve this problem?
Yeah,
and it seems like those types of like. Those types of drugs seem to be having really
well. That was
effects.
The original purpose; is it was used for therapy.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And then therapists were like, "This might be fun at you know my 60s orgy party."
And then the ravers
party.
Took over. Yeah, and then
it
the rest is history. Yeah,
got ruined. Like weed, dude. Like weed Dude, I don't smoke weed. I don't like the smell. I'm not into it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fucking weed. It shouldn't be a Schedule 1 drug.
Right, yeah.
It's not the same as heroin.
It's up there with heroin and meth, yeah.
Dude, cocaine's only a Schedule 2 drug.
I know, because they use it for eye surgeries, isn't it?
And broken noses.
And it constricts the capillaries, correct? Yeah.
Yeah, like you, for like boxers, used to use it like on swabs if they busted their nose. Yeah. And it's just ridiculous, dude. And like the old arguments for it, like the propaganda that went into making a Schedule 1 in like the 20s or 30s, I forget which decade. But it was always newspapers about, like...
William Hearst owned the newspaper.
And it was because
and
of
he owned timber.
The hemp thing.
Exactly.
But also the... Yeah. But the newspapers that turn out reports of, like, you know, reefer-crazed Negro sexually assault white woman. And, well, and my God!
You know that? Oh, my Lord! They also changed it from an H to a J to make it look more Hispanic in marijuana. Yeah, it's just propaganda techniques, and then people freak out, and here we are 80 years later, and... I think it'll be legal in the next 5 years federally.
Never mind that, you know, Wyatt Earp, everyone's, you know, favorite, like him and all those other like Western outlaw heroes and all that shit. Like you could just buy laudanum in the fucking like Penny's catalog and essentially just drink liquid heroin. Be like, oh, I got a headache. Time for my bottle of liquid cocaine.
That's good. Well, and now, so that's other kind of little tidbit I wanted to talk to you about before we close this up is you hear a lot too about that it's just like, hey, you got a problem? Take this pill.
I'm not a big fan.
Take this pill. But do you see that a lot with friends or do you hear about that where it's just...
Yeah, the Army, when I first got home, we had to do our debriefing with mental health and I was honest with them. Yeah. I didn't feel like I had a problem, but they tried to put me on these antidepressants and anti-anxiety
SSRIs.
Medicine. Huh?
SSRI type of antidepressants?
I'm not really sure. I do know that it turned me into a zombie.
Yeah.
It didn't make my dick stop working because it would still get hard, but then like I just couldn't like jizz.
Really?
And it was like horrible. It's like oh my God.
The opposite of premature ejaculation. I'm a super mature ejaculator.
Dude, like evidently, like it just made me like, I couldn't think, like I couldn't give the classes I needed to, like I was just fatigued. So I stopped taking them. And then the VA tried to do it again. I'm just like, no, dude. They're like, well, we'll prescribe it. Just try it. And it's been sitting on my shelf.
Okay.
I'm just like, I'm not doing this. This is my buddy who just got out of the Marine Corps. He got prescribed stuff and he's been taking it like he was told, but. Dude, like the side effects, like he'll get nauseous. Like he takes it and gets nauseous. Like it's like, dude, like I have a fucking migraine now. So it seems like the side effects, I don't see any benefit. He seems the same.
Right.
But now it's just like making him sick and making him throw up.
Yeah.
Like a sick cat. And it's like, just stop with this shit, dude. Yeah. Like.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's interesting, man. There seems to be there's a lot of alternative techniques now, it seems that I've heard about for veterans particularly because it's such a prevalent problem now.
Dude, back to that fucking hippie girl that I used to date.
Yeah.
She hit me up about a year ago. I was like, if you're ever having any problems, I have this really good spiritual healer. Uh-huh. And all I imagined was some dude with dreadlocks, like fat as fuck, sweating, like rubbing me with a crystal. I'm like,
no, dude, I heard of a Navy SEAL on, do you listen to any podcasts?
Yeah.
Aubrey Marcus has, I don't know if you've heard of him, but he had a Navy SEAL on, not someone that I pictured doing yoga. And it's a specific type of yoga that he now is like starting all these centers. Specifically, it's free for all military veterans. And apparently, like, it changed his life. He got put on the antidepressants. The VA fucked him over, all this shit. And I forget the specific type of yoga, but it's like this, you know, holistic love yoga. This is a Navy SEAL, did like 4 deployments. And it's just someone that I listen to. I'm like, this is not a dude that I pictured doing yoga. And you know, apparently it's miraculous for some of these guys.
I'm glad that worked for him, but here's my immediate thought.
Yeah.
Is usually people that are super happy and they do yoga and it seems like a positive thing, we're already that person before with more like the Grateful Dead, like hippie leanings.
Okay.
And I wonder what type of dude he was before the Navy.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Because like a lot of people join the military and you would never know who they were beforehand. Like,
no, yeah, that's true, yeah.
So, like, I'm glad it worked. Like, different stuff works for different people.
Oh,
like,
100%, man.
Like, reading calms me down. Like, I'm wondering if the yoga, like, actually does something, like, holistically good. Like, maybe releases some sort of endorphin. Or if it's just, like, that concentration.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cleaning guns.
Yeah.
I like shooting. But it relaxes me because it's, you know, totally. Menial task and I'm just doing something and, you know, smoking and having a good time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm willing to try anything. Probably won't grow a man bun and wear yoga pants though. But,
I mean, I don't wear yoga pants. I just occasionally do yoga.
Eat Nutella and wear yoga pants.
I don't know, dude. I don't know how you don't like Nutella, man.
I'm joking. It's okay. I don't know why I'm picking on Nutella today.
Yeah, well, shit, man. We've already been going for an hour and a half here. I'm going to wrap it up, but just fucking awesome coming. I know we just met, dude, but you coming here and sharing it, whether 10 people, I usually get a few hundred to 1,000 people that hear every episode. But if 10 people hear it or 10 million and down the road, like, your story has power. You know what I mean? Yeah. You sharing it with people so they get, and the truth, man. The truth will set you free, man.
Wow, that's that man bun coming out.
No, but it's cool, man. So I really appreciate you coming and sitting down and.
Yeah, I'll do this again if chatting, man. Yeah, request for that.
Would love to, dude. I'm gonna be around for the next like month or two.
Maybe I'll open up with more specific stories.
Yeah, dude, love to. That. Yeah, I like to keep it, you know, an hour and a half, and then I would love to have a part two. I'm sure the listeners would too.
For me. Let me know who gets on here and comments like, "Oh, this fucking faggot," something like that.
I don't think anybody will.
I don't know. I would. If it was some dude on here who's like, "Oh, as a Marine veteran," I'd probably like comment like, "Yeah, I like the Marine Corps because they're only like." The Army and the Marine Corps have the most in common because they both have infantry, but it's just weird. Like, our infantry's better. No, ours is. But it's really like, yo, like, the same, like, two twins arguing about who's the better twin.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Get the fuck out of here with that. But yeah, if it was some, like, I don't know, just because I like all the branches. Everyone, like, I'm a big fan of everyone does their own, but everyone has their part, from the logistics dude to the SEAL to the Air Force PJ, Marine Infantry, Army Infantry, whatever. Everyone has a job.
Yeah.
And all that matters is you do your job. No job's better than any other one. Like, there's definitely more badass jobs. Like, Green Berets have a really badass job, and, you know, SEALs and Marine Force Recon, they have badass jobs. I love my job, but it's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So, back to my joke, if it was, like, an Air Force, you'd be like, oh, that's an Air Force mechanic. I'd be like, fuck this guy. He went to Manus and had beers and had some, like, desert girlfriend with big, floppy-ass Air Force tits.
The Chair Force?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, I think that's for part two.
Oh, yeah?
I'm saying for part two.
All right.
All right, thanks, Zach.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. I don't know why I'm taking it anymore. I'm going to run off.